All right, so we are diving into the world of Piet Mondrian,
Yep.
and specifically his piece composition with red, blue, and yellow.
All right.
You send this Wikipedia article over, and I have to admit,
Yeah.
at first glance, I was like, okay, some squares, a whole lot of white.
Right.
But after digging a bit deeper with you, I'm realizing just how wrong I was.
It's deceptively simple, isn't it?
It really
Yeah.
is. And the Wikipedia article touches on this whole movement. He was a part of neoclassicism.
Yeah.
Honestly, not a term I throw around every day.
Sure.
Can you break down what that movement was all about for me?
Yeah, so neoplasticism,
Hmm.
to understand it, you kind of have to picture Europe after World War I.
Okay.
There was this sense of destruction, disillusionment, and out of that chaos, artists like Mondrian wanted to create a new visual language, something based on universal harmony and order.
So it's like they were trying to rebuild the world, but
Yeah.
with art and using these primary colors and straight lines as their building blocks.
Yeah, that's a great way to put it.
Yeah.
They believe that by stripping art down to its most basic elements, they could tap into a deeper truth, a universal beauty that transcended all the chaos of the time.
Huh. It makes you look at those squares a little differently, right?
Yeah.
But speaking of the painting itself, the article mentions this harmony of contrasts.
Right.
What is that all about?
So this is where Mondrian gets really fascinating.
Okay.
He uses those thick black lines to separate the colored squares and the white space,
Right.
creating this tension between the elements. You have the weight of the black lines against the flatness of the colors, the asymmetry of that one large red square.
Whoa, hold on. Rewind for a sec. That one big red square, it's like it's throwing the whole thing off balance, but somehow it doesn't.
Right.
Why does that work?
Well, that's the million-dollar question, and what makes Mondrian a genius?
Yeah.
It shouldn't work, but it does. Our eyes are naturally drawn to that red square. It dominates the composition.
Yeah.
But then those black lines and the other colors pull us back, create this push and pull effect that keeps our eyes moving across the canvas.
It's like he's playing with our expectations, making us question what balance really means in art. It's
Yeah.
not about perfect symmetry, it's more nuanced than that. It's like
Yeah.
he found a different kind of equilibrium.
Precisely. He's exploring the idea that balance doesn't have to be static. It could be dynamic, full of tension and energy.
Okay, so we've got these basic elements, the colors, the lines, the idea of balance. But how did he even arrive at this style? It
Yeah.
feels so different from anything that came before it.
Well, it didn't happen overnight. The article mentions that he was part of the Destiel movement early in his career, which is Dutch for the style.
Catchy. What was their deal?
So think of it as a precursor to neoplasticism.
Okay.
They also used those primary colors, straight lines, and geometric forms. They designed everything from furniture to buildings, all with this idea of creating a more harmonious world through art and design.
So he's got this background in simplifying and distilling things down to their essence, but
Right.
then he takes it even further with neoplasticism.
Exactly. He felt that Destiel, while groundbreaking, was still too connected to the physical world. He wanted to move beyond representing objects and explore a more spiritual universal language through pure abstraction. He felt that true harmony and balance weren't found in replicating the visible world, but in exploring the relationships between pure forms and colors.
It's like he's saying, forget apples and landscapes. Let's get to the very essence of visual experience.
Right. It's about how those basic elements interact with each other and with us, the viewers. It's about the emotions and thoughts those interactions evoke.
So he's not just painting what he sees, he's painting what he feels.
In a way, yes. He's trying to capture a feeling, idea, a philosophy, even through those seemingly simple elements.
It's like he's composing a symphony, but with colors and lines instead of notes.
Oh, I like that. And just like a composer has to think about rhythm and harmony, Mondrian was incredibly deliberate in how he arranged those elements.
Yeah.
He wasn't just throwing squares on a canvas randomly.
Speaking of not random, the article mentions this other painting, composition two, in red, blue, and yellow, which is almost identical to the one we've been talking about.
Yeah.
Same colors, same grid, just a few subtle differences. It's like finding out your favorite band has a B-side that's basically the same song, but with a slightly different groove.
Right.
What was he doing there?
This is where we really get into Mondrian's process.
Yeah.
He was fascinated by how those tiny changes, shifting a line, slightly resizing a square, could completely change how we experience the painting.
So it's like he was fine-tuning an experiment, but instead of beakers and test tubes, he was using canvases and paint.
Exactly.
Yeah.
He was testing his theories about balance and proportion, searching for that sweet spot where everything just clicks for the viewer.
Okay, but give me an example. what's different about Composition 2, and how does it change the feeling compared to the first one?
Well, in Composition 2, the red square is a bit smaller and positioned closer to the center. And instead of a thick black line defining its left edge, it's bordered by white space.
Okay, I'm picturing it in my head. What's the impact?
That shift in size and position creates a subtler tension. The red doesn't dominate as much. Your eye is still drawn to it, but then it's freer to wander to explore the relationships between the other elements.
It's like he's giving the viewer more space to breathe, to come to their own conclusions about the balance and harmony of the piece.
Precisely. It's a more contemplative experience, inviting you to engage with the work on a deeper level.
This is blowing my mind, and it makes you appreciate how much thought went into every single line, every square, every bit of white space.
And that level of intentionality is part of what elevates Mondrian's work from simple geometry to powerful abstract art. It's not just decoration, it's a carefully constructed visual language.
So we've gone from just some squares to a whole philosophy of art and design. But how does this connect to the world outside the museum? Why should people care about Mondrian and his colorful squares in 2024?
That's the beauty of it. His influence is everywhere, even if we don't realize it. Think about it. Clean lines, bold colors, a focus on simplicity. Those are hallmarks of Mondrian style, and they're everywhere you look.
Wait, you're saying my entire apartment with its minimalist furniture and color block throw pillows is basically an homage to Mondrian?
Maybe. But it goes beyond just aesthetics. Look at graphic design with its emphasis on clean layouts and typography, or architecture with those sleek modern buildings that embrace geometric forms. Mondrian's ideas help shape how we see and interact with the world around us.
That's wild. So even though a lot of people might not know his name, his influence is woven into the fabric of our visual culture.
Absolutely. And by understanding his work and the ideas behind it, we can start to decode that visual language, appreciate those choices that designers and artists make. It's like having a secret key to unlock a deeper level of understanding.
This has been eye-opening, to say the least. We started with what seemed like a simple painting of squares, and now I'm seeing Mondrian's influence everywhere.
That's the power of a deep dive, isn't it? It's about going beyond the surface, peeling back the layers to uncover the hidden depths and connections.
Speaking of hidden depths, I have to ask about something else the article mentioned. Apparently, before all the squares and primary colors, Mondrian was really into cubism and inspired by nature. How does that fit into all of this?
It's actually a crucial part of his journey. Early in his career, he was drawn to the way Cubist painters like Picasso were breaking down objects into geometric forms. He sought it as a way of getting at the essence of things, their underlying structure.
Okay, I can see that. But Cubism still feels representational, even with the fragmented forms. How did he go from that to completely abstract art?
He felt that Cubism, while innovative, was still limited by its connection to the physical world. He wanted to push further to explore a more universal spiritual reality that existed beyond the objects themselves.
So those early paintings, inspired by things like trees and landscapes, they were like stepping stones leading him towards this pure abstraction.
Exactly. He was studying the structures and rhythms of the natural world, but then he distilled those observations down to their essence, using them as a springboard for his own visual language. He believed that by moving away from representing specific objects, he could tap into a more profound truth. A universal harmony that resonated on a deeper level.
Wow, talk about a journey. Who knew there was so much history, philosophy, and artistic experimentation packed into those seemingly simple squares?
And that's just scratching the surface. There's a whole world of art history, artistic movements, and creative philosophies out there waiting to be explored.
Well, you've definitely given our listeners a lot to think about today. So to our listeners, here's a little homework assignment. Next time you see a work of abstract art, don't just walk by. Take a moment. Really look at it. Think about the colors, the shapes, the balance, the tension. You might be surprised by what you discover. And who knows, you might even start seeing the world a little differently. Until next time, keep those minds curious and keep on diving deep.